keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host.
Welcome to Seculo. This is Jordan Seculo. My dad is joining us, of course, as well today, back still in our home offices. The ACLJ continues to work, but as in the Southeast and Midwest, of course, being experienced all across the country. Major snowstorms, which are, of course, causing to be pretty tough to get into the office, but we are still able to broadcast to you. And there's a lot of big news today. Dad, right off the bat, the Biden administration, who made a reversal right after taking office, just a month after taking office, they took the Houthi rebel group off the foreign terror organization list. Now, after this proxy war has begun between the United States and Iran and other partners by firing back at the Houthis firing back at the United States and our allies. Now they're rethinking that. It looks like they will be put back on the foreign terrorist organization list, which is a big reversal for them because we know why they did it. They did it because they wanted a negotiation with Iran.
Well, look, I think the problem is that the negotiations with Iran have overclouded and really clouded the judgment of the Biden administration's foreign policy staff from Jake Sherman on down. And here's the problem. And I think this offends Antony Blinken to the Secretary of State. They were so committed to getting a deal with Iran, which now is way off the table, that they took a known terrorist organization. I mean, the Houthi rebels, which is a military force out of Yemen, are known terrorists. They are part of the Iranian export of terrorism. And there was no change in their attitude as far as conducting acts of terror. Yet the Biden administration removed them from the terror list, which was a huge mistake to lose that designation. In fact, we filed at the American Center for Law and Justice, a Freedom of Information Act, a demand to get information about why the initial decision was made to actually take them off the list. They've conducted over 130 attacks on U.S. Troops, ships, bases. They have disrupted the water passage rights, especially in the Red Sea, which is affecting global commerce. They're wreaking havoc wherever they go, and they are one of the largest terrorist armies in the world. And yet the Biden administration, for whatever reason, they decided to delist them, which we think was obviously because by delisting them, they thought they were giving a nod to Iran. Well, the end result is the Houthis are nothing but a proxy for Iranian terrorism. We say it. I say it again. I watched last night our ACLJ film, The Export, dealing with the export of terrorism from Iran. And I encourage, it's available for free. I encourage you to go to ACLJ Films and watch The Export so you get an understanding of exactly what's going on in the region and with these terror groups. It's really fascinating. It was shot about 10 years ago, but it is irrelevant. It's as relevant today as it was then. And I encourage you to go to ACLJ Films and check that out. But it gives you this history, and nothing in the history has changed. In fact, they're getting more bold, more aggressive. And I think the United States is being put more in a more difficult situation. And that's why you have so many troops in the area, so many naval vessels in the area trying to protect those waterways.
Folks, at the ACLJ, we have to move with the speed of relevancy to tackle the historic issues we see unfolding before us every single day. We find ourselves in one of those moments right now. The Colorado Supreme Court banned a presidential candidate from the ballot, and states are rushing to use this to take away your right to vote. Votes are already being cast for the presidential election, and your right to vote for the candidate of your choice is at stake. We're taking on the biggest election case in U.S. history at the U.S. Supreme Court, and we've had to mobilize everyone at the ACLJ to do so. A case of this magnitude at the Supreme Court requires immense resources, and a group of our donors have stepped up to match donations for the next 3 days to fund this effort. Our brief at the Supreme Court is due in just a few days. Every gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through our matching moment. Go to ACLJ.org and please donate now. We will be right back after this break.
read the news carefully, it seems to me that we are one accident away, one fired missile away from a huge potential escalation. Because you read the articles, and we've got fighter jets shooting down cruise missiles that are aimed at destroyers, and they're in the sea. I mean, one of those times, if that doesn't work, or they miss their target because they're of a barrage or something like that, and U.S. servicemen and women potentially killed by these actions of the Houthi group, you're talking about a massive escalation, because the Houthis will be there in their size of 150 to 200,000 so long as Iran is able to fund them and get them the weapons they need.
I saw yesterday on Israel News, I-24, they had a picture of a huge container ship. And that's a ship with a lot of goods. And they were going through the Red Sea, and the Houthis surrounded it. And they surrounded it with – I mean, this was a giant ship, and they surrounded it with smaller boats. But the Houthis also have helicopters to land on these ships and take control. So they're affecting world economies right now. So I think the Biden administration has made two missteps here. Number one, even thinking you could be negotiating with the Iranians was wrong and ridiculous. And number two, and I think equally as concerning here, is the fact that they are disrupting the flow of goods and services right now, and that is affecting world economies. But like I said, we have a FOIA request out there looking at this situation to get the answers to why they did it. The Biden administration needs to be held accountable. We cannot continue this type of foreign policy. Placating Iran does not work. It never has worked. It will not work.
You know, some interesting points, too. Even when they announced the designation, which appears to be in the works for today, there's an additional 30 days until the Houthis are actually part of that list, because the sanctions are not only against the Houthi rebels, but anyone doing business with them, of course, selling them weapons, getting them goods, anybody who is funding them. And so it's like a 30-day warning period. So they've got this small ability that now they know of 30 days to stockpile weapons, to stockpile fighters, and get as much equipment as they can in. And of course, that's by not violating any sanctions from the U.S. And of course, these organizations, as we know, are able to operate around those sanctions. It was a move made ultimately by the Trump administration towards the end of the administration, because the Houthis became a group that was mostly, almost fully, conducting a civil conflict within Yemen. And then they began turning their guns, literally, and their rocket launchers on Western allies, including the U.S. military in the Middle East. So that designation got made.
Yeah, and think about that for a moment, how bold of a move that is to have the rebels out of Yemen attacking U.S. facilities, troops, ships. And as you said, one cruise missile, one missile fouled in the wrong directions, and now you have more danger. Interesting, Navy SEALs found Iranian missile parts on a boat headed for Yemen yesterday. And they're saying the same missiles that have been targeting the boats in the Red Sea. So it's all coming out of Iran. There's no doubt about it. And I think the naivete of the Biden administration here is wreaking havoc on the reality that we have a really legitimate mess in the Middle East. It's getting worse. It's complicated. And the Biden administration is making it more complicated. They should have never removed that designation in the first place. And I think we have to be prepared for the eventuality of something going even worse, as you said, Jordan. But let me tell you what we're doing at the ACLJ. We've got a Freedom of Information Act request that is out to both the State Department and to the agencies involved to find out who made this decision, what was the basis of the decision, and what kind of politics were involved in this decision. I expect we'll start getting either the denial or some information soon. We'll probably be in federal court on this one, as we are with most of these, to get the kind of information that we need to move forward. So on that front, we're fully engaged. ACLJ is fully engaged. Of course, our office in Jerusalem, run by Jeff Balaban, is watching that situation very, very closely. I will report also that our colleagues in Europe and in Israel are taking another group of hostages this coming week to both London for events, including with the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, and the Foreign Secretary, and the Home Secretary, as well as members of the British Parliament, and also heading over to Madrid to deal with the same situation, bringing hostage families over to Spain to meet with officials there. Our European Center for Law and Justice fully involved in that one as well. We also distributed a legal brief that we prepared in light of the quick hearing at the International Court of Justice involving South Africa's ridiculous claim of genocide against Israel. We served this legal brief on every relevant country that is involved with the IJC. We served this also so that you know, we served it also on the UN Secretary General.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important for people to know just how active we are in these issues and our expertise when it comes to the law of war, the law of armed conflict, and these ongoing situations. Of course, I think it would only be Israel that would have to defend themselves in a court while they were engaged in an ongoing war because they were invaded by Hamas and a terror group and are responding, still responding, and in the midst of their own troops being killed, are having to defend themselves against charges of apartheid in a courtroom in Western Europe. And I think I tie this, Dad, back to Iran and the Houthis and the foreign terror organization list. At what point is the Western world going to wake up and realize that most of our problems when it comes to terrorism these days, when it comes to interference with our shipping or even Hamas, this is all linked back to Iran. We have got to isolate Iran again to so that their economy is basically destroyed, which the Trump administration had done. So that means they have no money for their nuclear program and no money for their proxies. And what did we see during that time period? We saw their proxies take very little action. Their head proxy leader was killed by the Trump administration. So everything started to lapse. Now, right now, they are flush with cash. They have got allies with Russia and China, and they're able to support these offshoot terror groups. And like as you said, Dad, very bold moves. The Iranians themselves would not want to make these moves, but they will allow their cohorts and the groups they sponsor to make these moves for them.
Listen to what Jake Sullivan said. This is a statement from the White House National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan. We have to guard against and be vigilant against the possibility that, in fact, rather than heading towards de-escalation, we are on a path of escalation that we have to manage. By the way, he doesn't say that we have to avoid. He's saying that we have to manage. And this is the problem. When you had a failed policy going in by changing these designations, when you started trusting Iran, which was insane, this is what you get. And these policies have real consequences for our ally Israel, real consequences for our allies in the Gulf states. It's just plain dangerous. And again, ACLJ, European Center for Law and Justice, ACLJ Jerusalem, of course, our ACLJ office in Washington, fully engaged on this literally as we speak. So we're staying engaged there as well. Let me also say that we are filing our brief to the Supreme Court of the United States, maybe even hopefully getting it into the, at least to the printer today. And this is the brief that we filed, our opening merits brief in the case involving the attempt to remove President Trump from the ballot in the state of Colorado. Remember, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that the president was an officer under the Constitution, was engaged in insurrection, even though the Senate found the exact opposite and ordered his removal. We've taken the case to the Supreme Court of the United States. Our brief is due, our actual brief document is due Thursday, and we are in the final stages of all of that. The printing is a process with this. I could show our audience. Let me see if I have one here. I do. We've showed these before, but you don't just file like on paper with staples. This is what they look like. So this is a petition for certiorari, and this is actually what a merit brief looks like. Again, bound. This one, ours will be green, not blue. That's just the color coding of how they do it, so the court knows that. But this is the situation of the fact that we're in a fight right now in a very significant way.
Folks, at the ACLJ, we have to move with the speed of relevancy to tackle the historic issues we see unfolding before us every single day. We find ourselves in one of those moments right now. The Colorado Supreme Court banned a presidential candidate from the ballot, and states are rushing to use this to take away your right to vote. Votes are already being cast for the presidential election, and your right to vote for the candidate of your choice is at stake. We're taking on the biggest election case in U.S. history at the U.S. Supreme Court, and we've had to mobilize everyone at the ACLJ to do so. A case of this magnitude at the Supreme Court requires immense resources, and a group of our donors have stepped up to match donations for the next 3 days to fund this effort. Our brief at the Supreme Court is due in just a few days. Every gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through our matching moment. Go to ACLJ.org and please donate now. We will be right back after this break.
Folks, we encourage you again to follow everything. Once the brief is available, we'll get it up online to ACLJ.org. So that you can see it as well. And so I encourage you again, take part in this matching moment, shifting a bit to the politics too, and talking about how all these dates matter. We're less now than a week away from the New Hampshire primary. It's a very different makeup than what you see in Iowa. Obviously in Iowa, there was, you see all this spin that's trying to come out of it, but we saw the highest margin of victory ever in Iowa, and we saw the largest percentage won in Iowa by President Trump. So now we go to New Hampshire, where the polls are tighter. And the question is, does anyone emerge out of New Hampshire other than President Trump who can legitimately say that they could actually win this primary?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So the latest polls in New Hampshire are very close. Well, at least very close for two candidates. And that is for President Trump at 44%, Nikki Haley at 40%. Ron DeSantis is a distance third at 9%. So I don't see how he is spending any money there. I understand he's not running ads. He's made a couple of appearances. I guess he'll stay up there for the week. But it's not likely he's going to poll very well, or the end result's going to be very well received for Ron DeSantis. The question here is, does Nikki Haley come out of New Hampshire and possibly win? I mean, and I don't know that. I still think, looking at the data, that Donald Trump pulls it out. But it's going to be very close. It always is close in New Hampshire. But if Nikki Haley does come in first, if she wins New Hampshire, if that fact were to happen, if that were to be the end result here, you don't know what impact that can have. That, I mean, she's behind in South Carolina, which is the next one. Well, Nevada's in between. But the next one would be a big one would be South Carolina. That's her home state. She's behind there right now. I think she's polling at about 25, 28%. But, you know, Jordan, you've done these primary campaigns. Momentum can make a big difference. So it could become a bit of a horse race, possibly.
Yeah, and you know, for her campaign, they did not get out of Iowa what they hoped. Let's all be honest.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to be a strong second-place finish. Instead, they were – you know, everybody was – it was the second and third place were basically tied. Biggest loser. Who was the biggest loser in that by 1 or 2 points? Because someone went in there with a very different strategy and blew them out of the water. And what we're seeing is that even when there was those frigid temperatures and it was the horrible weather, that the Trump voters, who there's always a question about, they love rallies, but will they show up to caucus, which takes hours during a blizzard in this tough weather? They certainly did, which means it's also like a passion monitor, as I like to call it. Like, are you the second choice of somebody? Are you their first choice? Because first choice candidates, people will brave the elements to vote for. When I see all these, well, they could be my second choice candidate. Those are not typically the candidates people will, again, change their schedules for. So we will see, does anyone other than Donald Trump get a legitimate ticket out of New Hampshire? And would Nikki Haley, if she does not pull off some kind of miracle victory there in New Hampshire, put South Carolina and losing her home state where she served as governor, very popular governor, on the line, where she right now appears that she would lose that primary? We will, again, a lot can happen, but within these next 6 days, I mean, look what we already saw. Vivek Ramaswamy not only pulling out of the race, but endorsing President Trump and now on the campaign trail with President Trump side by side. And though he was only getting 5-6%, he's urging his supporters, that 5 or 6% in each of one of these states where it could be a little closer, to go to President Trump. And of course, his message was a MAGA message. So I think, again, that there's still the person who got the wind on their sails out of Iowa was President Trump. It's whether or not that wind continues as you move across the country.
Well, and also, you know, here's where the politics come into play, and it comes into play for real. And that is, if in fact President Trump were to win New Hampshire, I think that bodes very well for him and does not bode well for either Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis. Now, it may affect DeSantis less because he's not playing there, so to speak. But I think Nikki Haley's campaign is based on pulling off an upset in New Hampshire. If Donald Trump wins by 2 points, that's going to be an upset for Nikki Haley. On the other hand, if Nikki Haley were to win out of New Hampshire, I think that there could be a dynamic change. Is it enough to overcome? I don't know. You're then 3 weeks away from, or 4 weeks away, I guess, from South Carolina, and you'll see what happens there. But it would make it much more of a horse race. There's no doubt about it. So I think Nikki Haley's success or failure here really falls on New Hampshire. The question, Jordan, that I have is, what does Ron DeSantis do right now? He's not playing in New Hampshire. He's not going to win or place in South Carolina. So does he hope he can hold on through Super Tuesday and pull something off? Because I don't think right now he would win. And I think he's a good governor, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he could win in Florida.
I think if you're Ron DeSantis, you hope Donald Trump comes out with a big win in New Hampshire, which is maybe the decision why you don't want to be too involved there, since his voter is a very similar to a Trump voter. He's also one that embraced basically the America First and MAGA kind of politics. He just said it's someone new who should be carrying that mantle. So if he kind of stays out of New Hampshire, Nikki Haley flounders this week, which, again, this is just ifs because the polls are showing it's very tight. But if something were to happen where, you know, President Trump wins by even more than like 2 points, but a 10-point victory that's called earlier in the night, then maybe he thinks he will be the last candidate standing in the choice between President Trump and another candidate, and Ron DeSantis, instead of President Trump and Nikki Haley. I say that only because of where South Carolina is. Because of wedging South Carolina in there makes Nikki Haley have to make some very tough decisions right away after the New Hampshire primary results.
You know, your support of the ACLJ is critical. We have a group of our donors that have come together. This was an emergency case. We didn't have the budget planned for this. We had a group of donors come together. They did a matching moment, which is just for a couple of days, where any donation you make is going to be matched dollar for dollar. So we encourage you to go to aclj.org and make that donation today. Again, aclj.org. And if you become a monthly donor of the ACLJ, you become an ACLJ champion. We're now officially over 19,000, which means we've added since October almost 3,500 ACLJ champions. Our goal is to get close to 30,000 by the end of the year. So we're working on that. ACLJ.org. Again, if you can donate monthly and become an ACLJ champion, really helps us out in these things.
And if you do become a champion, you'll also be taking part in this matching moment. So if you become a champion today, your donation this month will be matched. And if you are an ACLJ champion, your monthly donation is matched. So it's part of the matching moment. You don't have to pick to say, well, I'd like to do a recurring donation, but I'd like to be part of this matching moment. You can do both at the same time. Now, others may say, listen, I've got a larger amount I'd like to donate for this matching moment and a smaller amount that I could donate regularly as an ACLJ champion. You can certainly do that, and both of those donations would be matched through this matching moment where we are preparing, as we speak right now, to file our merits brief at the U.S. Supreme Court so that voters, not just in Colorado, but around the entire country in all 50 states, when they vote in the Republican primary, and ultimately, if that candidate makes it through to the general election, that they can vote for Donald Trump if they so choose.
We'll be back with more in just a minute.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host.
You know, Ted Cruz endorsed President Trump yesterday. Day before, Marco Rubio endorsed President Trump. So it looks like the senatorial leadership is starting to back the former president. I think this race is going to be, personally, I think this is going to be over with pretty soon, and it's going to turn into a general election. We're not far away from that either, folks. I mean, it's very, very close. And look, I want to tell you something about general elections. Take one example. In, you know, 10 more days, we're filing brief number two at the Supreme Court of the United States on the biggest election case in ACLJ history. The biggest election case in history. It's the first time that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment has been utilized to remove a president off of a ballot so that you cannot vote for the candidate of your choice. And there's cases pending in 15 states. And the next major appeal is going to be in West Virginia, a case we're involved in. We represent the West Virginia GOP. Here's the thing. If that case were to go the wrong direction, which right now it is, I mean, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled the wrong way. If we don't get it reversed, it could affect everybody's right to vote because you're voting for a candidate who then is not on a ballot in these other states. Well, then that eliminates his ability or her ability to get the votes necessary to be the nominee. Then you're doing the electoral maps here. So the vote case here is significant. We, as I said, we're in the process of over to the printer. The brief is going, and we will then get our final copies of that tomorrow or maybe even later today. And that first brief is done, but that's brief number one. There is another brief that we have to do once the other side files. It's all very quick. It's very short. The briefs are filed literally in days. So we file on Thursday. The other side files the end of the month. We file on February 5th, which is a Monday. So we'll work the brief on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, printer Monday, file Monday. Case will be argued a few days later, and then we wait for the vote will take place in chambers probably that afternoon, no later than Friday of that week. And then a decision can come. Literally, we should be on decision alert by the next weekend. I mean, I think it can move that quickly. It's a huge case, and we have a huge challenge because obviously Israel has kept our team very busy. We've had teams deployed from Europe, from Jerusalem, from Washington working on all of this. So this is what it means. Your support of the ACLJ right now is really critical and significant. And we've got a matching moment, which means a group of our donors, including donors in our champions group, have come together and said, we want to match whatever's raised over these few days, dollar for dollar. So whatever amount you put in, it's going to be doubled. So if you donate $30, it becomes $60. We encourage you to do that at ACLJ.org. to support this matching moment, ACLJ.org. Very important for you to participate in that. And again, if you could do that monthly, you become an ACLJ champion. And let me tell you something about these champions. I looked this morning. We have 19,036. Our goal for this month would be to get that close to 19,400, 19,500, continuing to build that up. We want a war chest capability here at the ACLJ, as so many cases are coming and coming at a rapid speed. Jordan and I were on a conversation last night looking at the case list, the litigation list, and it's pretty vast. And it's everything from the Supreme Court in the United States to students and parents in Nevada. I mean, that's how diverse this is. So I think this is an important time. I encourage you to go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org and make that gift to our Matching Moment campaign. Jordan, any final comments?
You know, I think, again, we got a lot to watch politically. Over less than a week now, moving into New Hampshire. Check out how tones change. Watch where the Trump campaign, who are they focusing on? What is DeSantis doing? What is Nikki Haley doing? And of course, did any of these other former candidates start popping up at President Trump or other candidates' events, like we saw with Vivek Ramaswamy back on stage with President Trump immediately after dropping out of the race? You think about his strategy, worked for him. He became a national figure. Take part in this matching moment. Double the impact of your donation. Donate today at ACLJ.org.
We will be right back after this break.
welcome back to Seculo. As all these issues right now with Mayorkas, again, the impeachment inquiry beginning. Three U.S. state attorney generals are testifying to the Homeland Security Committee right now, chaired by Mark Green, Congressman Mark Green of Tennessee. We get the ACLJ action team. The email went out, if you're on that list, to ask you to take that second step, which is to contact your member of Congress in the House and ask them to vote to impeach. We did an initial campaign to open up this inquiry, and the second campaign is to get the vote to impeach. I want to go to Bob Burkett, who is Chief of Staff at ACLJ Action, Senior Advisor there as well. And Bob, right away, I know over 5,000 people initially have already sent letters to their members of Congress. It's a easy thing for people to do, even if they're not on that email list, and we encourage them to do that at acljaction.org. But if they go there at ACLJ Action, they'll see it right on the homepage. I'm holding the preset, the letter. But again, we let you get to edit it if you want. You can write your own letter. You can take this language, or you can use ours exactly. But we make sure it goes to the member of Congress that's correct, that represents your district. And I think, again, we can get this to 10,000 plus very quickly this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks, Jordan. It's a very important issue for the country. It's not going away anytime soon. And we here at ACLJ Action want you to voice how important this issue is to you. And we want you to make sure that you can contact members of Congress to let them know how much this matters to you. I know the more, I once was in a congressional office and my job was to review the mail the congressman got. And I can tell you for a fact that every letter the congressman gets, he is made aware of. And the more letters congressman gets on a specific subject, the more they want to focus on that subject. So if you go to acljaction.org, as Jordan mentioned, on our homepage, our Impeach Mayorkas campaign should be very prominently displayed, very easy to click on it. You type in some information and about two more clicks, your member of Congress is made aware of your concern on the issue. So please, if you have not already, take time and go and do that.
I mean, just some updated numbers that we were sending. 302,000 migrants encounters in December. That's the highest ever in a single month in U.S. history. So, I mean, every month we're getting numbers. We're hitting records here. 785,000 encounters since October 1st. That's the highest quarter in U.S. history. It's on pace to set a new record for fiscal year 2024. You look at 7 million, over 7 million encounters between 2021, a fiscal year, and 2023. And then you go through the removals. 142,000 removals in 2023, 72,000 in 2022. I mean, when you look at how low those numbers are, and then you realize, okay, wait, where's the other 6 million plus people? They're inside the United States.
Yeah. So the interesting question here, I'm going to go to Harry Hutchinson on this, is when you look at impeachment, it's usually for high crimes and misdemeanors, right? I mean, that's the kind of the standards. What's the basis upon which, Harry, as you see it here, that justifies the impeachment of Mayorkas?
Number one, he has abused his authority. Number two, he's engaged in a dereliction of its constitutional duty to protect the American people. Number three, he has exposed the American people to a fentanyl crisis, to a child sex trafficking crisis, and his efforts in this arena have been willful and deliberate. It's not a mistake. In other words, basically, the Biden administration has opened the floodgates and has exposed the American people to harm, and as such, he ought to be impeached quickly.
Bob, what is the temperature read right now in Washington for an impeachment of Mayorkas, as you see it?
Right. Yeah. No. So I think that this these series of hearings is proceeding at an opportune time. I think that when the resolution was initially introduced in November, there were some people who were a little hesitant. I know 8 Republicans sided with Democrats to send the impeachment vote back to committee. But I think that a lot of the more moderate Republicans that were concerned about this before, now that a comprehensive investigation has been conducted by the committee, and they've seen a little bit more of the evidence for themselves, and it's gone through the appropriate processes, I think that they can stand pretty united behind this impeachment. So I think it's full steam ahead for the time being, and I think it'll be a relatively quick timeline.
And then, of course, the Senate has to take this up. That's going to be a tougher bar, but then you're a full trial still before the U.S. Senate. And then, Bob, there is when I think you get to refocus the American people and even bring more people in so that they understand these numbers. I mean, we talk about the illegal immigrants, but I also want to always make sure we talk about the number of Americans being affected by this. The fact that fentanyl is the number one cause of death between Americans that are 18 to 45. That's probably like the most important part of our workforce. You know, that is the key demographic in all ratings because it's the age group where people are both again starting their work and also starting to again kind of make it up the ladder in work. Also have families and they are spending more. And yet that part of our society, the number one cause of death, not car wrecks. Not cancer, but fentanyl overdoses, which we know is also a plague from the open southern border. All of that message, I think it's got to be made clear to the American people, Bob, that there is a way to stop this.
Yeah, 100%, Jordan. And, you know, I'm glad we continue hammering the fentanyl aspect of this. It's really interesting. It's very obvious now that the White House and the Department of Homeland Security are increasingly concerned about Mayorkas's impeachment. Today, DHS and the White House released kind of talking points or overall messaging for attempting to frame the debate. One of the points they mentioned, Jordan, is that there has been a record amount of fentanyl intercepted at the border. Well, you know, underlying that is there's more fentanyl overflowing across our southern border than there ever has been in American history. And as you mentioned, I was reading an article today, and in the past few years, deaths as a result of fentanyl have tripled. American citizens are dying at three times the rate they were just a few years ago. So, you know, you can manipulate statistics all you want and pretend like Mayorkas is doing a good job, but he is directly contributing to the deaths and multiple harms of American citizens.
Harry, do you think that I was asking Bob the same question, is the populace there, are the American people there to say, this guy needs to go? That's the question to me.
I think that is the quintessential question, and I think the American people are beginning to mobilize on this particular issue. I also would argue that the American press and the journalists, they haven't focused sufficiently on this issue. And so I think this letter that ACLJ Action will help focus attention on this. But I hope the Republicans in Congress will pursue this particular issue, and they will pursue it with all deliberate speed, because this is a very important issue for the American people. One study, for instance, has shown that the border crisis has cost us about $500 billion, and it's growing, and the Biden administration shows no signs that it's willing to restrict illegal entry in this country. 8 million encounters have occurred since the Biden administration took office in January of 2021, and 6.7 million encounters on the southern border, which also means that there are encounters with illegals on the northern border and elsewhere.
Yeah. We first did a campaign to open up this inquiry. This is the second, which is to vote to impeach. And again, you go to ACLJ Action. You put in your name, address, so that we can pull up the right members of right member of Congress for you in the House of Representatives. And you are able then to send a letter immediately to them. You can edit that letter. We have a preset one there. You can take all the preset language out, write your own letter, and we make it a deliverable for you. But also then we're able to put these numbers together. And again, it just went out. So if you're not on the ACLJ Action email list, I encourage you to do that at acljaction.org. But you can go now to ACLJ Action, and you'll see right on the homepage where you can send that letter to your member of Congress. And it's, again, a very quick way to do it, as quick as you want it to be. Or you can take time and add some of your own language as well. We're going to talk about these new numbers when we get back from the break.
Folks, at the ACLJ, we have to move with the speed of relevancy to tackle the historic issues we see unfolding before us every single day. We find ourselves in one of those moments right now. The Colorado Supreme Court banned a presidential candidate from the ballot, and states are rushing to use this to take away your right to vote. Votes are already being cast for the presidential election, and your right to vote for the candidate of your choice is at stake. We're taking on the biggest election case in U.S. history at the U.S. Supreme Court, and we've had to mobilize everyone at the ACLJ to do so. A case of this magnitude at the Supreme Court requires immense resources, and a group of our donors have stepped up to match donations for the next 3 days to fund this effort. Our brief at the Supreme Court is due in just a few days. Every gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through our matching moment. Go to ACLJ.org and please donate now. We will be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Secul. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. And as the hearings are ongoing, the impeachment inquiry ongoing into Secretary Mayorkas on his failure to secure the southern border, specifically the northern border as well, to implement policies that work, to really not address the numbers, which are setting records. Every time there's a new report on the numbers of people that have been either they've been encountered at the border or have been released, they're setting new records. The amount of people being killed by drugs like fentanyl, setting new records in numbers. It's also the number one cause of death for all Americans between the ages of 18 and 45. So this is something that has happened, again, under the Biden administration. Rick Rennell's joining us now. And Rick, one thing that's happening in New York City today at one of the major schools in Brooklyn is that students were told to go home, that they will do remote learning because they have to use the school for about 1,900 to 2,000 illegal immigrants who are in New York. And they're worried because the temperatures are dropping so low over this weekend, storms that are happening on the East Coast, that they're going to use the school for those 1,900. But that students and citizens and taxpayers in New York are told to go home and try remote learning, which was a huge failure under COVID.
Look, let's be clear. The rip and replace of Americans in New York City is just one of many of the consequences of an open border. You wouldn't really think that New York students would be impacted this way, but these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, which the media have turned into some sort of noble cause, but the reality is these are states within the United States, cities within the United States that are ignoring immigration laws, federal immigration laws, and giving people aid and comfort to flout the United States legal system. This is an undermining of democracy. This is an attack on our democracy. And now what we're seeing with students being replaced in New York, this is just the beginning, Jordan. We are going to see this in every single city where illegal immigrants are going to become the priority over U.S. citizens. And let me just finish by saying, of course, we want legal immigration. The State Department has a very long line of people who are trying to get visas and asylum seekers. We need to do a better job on the legal side of moving these people along so that people don't jump the line.
You know, Rick, when you're talking about James Madison High School in Brooklyn, New York, you're not talking about some tiny building. You're talking about a huge high school. My mother was a graduate of James Madison High School, as was her classmate, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, this is a famous New York landmark high school. It's a full block, or was then, a full city block, mammoth. And it's disrupting. So by not having immigration policies that are working, we are disrupting the flow of our own students, citizens of the United States, young people, ability to learn. I mean, that's how bad this is.
And make no mistake, this is just the latest example. We've had numerous examples of Americans being displaced. Certainly money alone. You think about all the money that Arizona and some of the border states like Texas have had to deal with because of the open border. And now it's impacting every single state in the United States. The open border is no longer just a border issue. It is a crisis for our budget, for our cities, and for our states.
So I've said, and we've said on this broadcast, Rick, that the border crisis is not limited to border cities and border towns or border states. It's Brooklyn, New York as well.
Yeah, look, this is what's scary. If you live in Iowa, if you live in New Hampshire, if you live in Wisconsin, Michigan, this is an issue that is directly impacting you. If you have a sanctuary city, a sanctuary state, if your politicians in your state are allowing people to openly disregard federal laws and have safety, aid, comfort in doing so, this is an outrage. You need to speak up. You don't have a country if you don't have a border. And I'll finish by saying, we saw this in Europe. The UK left the European Union, a term we call Brexit, simply because the European Union wouldn't enforce immigration laws. And the UK said, we're out of here.
I want to show people, and I'll explain it to the audience that's listening by radio, but for those that are watching on our social media, this is James Madison High School. It is a full city block in Brooklyn, front and back. It's mammoth. It's been there since the early 1900s. Like I said, my mother went to school there. And the interesting thing is the New York comptroller, Brad Lander, who is a Democrat, by the way, said that placing the migrants at these particular places highlights mismanagement and the waste of money that is all too present in City Hall's approach to shelter and services for asylum seekers being at the school made no sense, because not only are you displacing the students, these schools really aren't set up for that kind of situation. We know there's really rough weather coming in, so we're sympathetic to that. But I think of the Javits Center or Madison Square Garden or places like that. But instead, it's a huge public school servicing thousands of Brooklynites in New York that go to school there.
Look, this is a side effect of the problem. We will continue to have these side effects where individuals are displaced, whether it's tourists in a hotel, whether it's students in a high school. This is all going to continue to happen until we tackle the problem. The problem is allowing the border to be open, allowing asylum seekers to abuse the system. They are abusing the process. They're coming into our country claiming all sorts of excuses. We're ill-equipped to be able to get them through in time. And instead of keeping them outside of the United States as they apply for asylum, the Biden administration is welcoming them into our cities. And we will never be able to keep track of these individuals who have illegally cut the line. They're everywhere in our country now. Millions.
We always appreciate you joining us and being part of the team. And, you know, I think, folks, if you actually did a survey right now in New York of those other places, they probably are being used for that. That just didn't displace American students. So you're not getting as much in the news. But we know, like Rick said, private hotels, conference centers and places like that, but they've run out of space in those places. So now they're having to kick American kids out of school and say, we'll go back to remote learning because we have nowhere for these 2,000 people in Brooklyn. I mean, so again, this is just one borough in New York. Again, folks, this is why we think it's so important for you to become an ACLJ champion on all these issues. You know, we've got two pending lawsuits right now against the Department of Homeland Security, one on the disinformation board, another, again, on these policies exactly and why the policies were changed, the working policies under the Trump administration.
Folks, at the ACLJ, we have to move with the speed of relevancy to tackle the historic issues we see unfolding before us every single day. We find ourselves in one of those moments right now. The Colorado Supreme Court banned a presidential candidate from the ballot, and states are rushing to use this to take away your right to vote. Votes are already being cast for the presidential election, and your right to vote for the candidate of your choice is at stake. We're taking on the biggest election case in U.S. history at the U.S. Supreme Court, and we've had to mobilize everyone at the ACLJ to do so. A case of this magnitude at the Supreme Court requires immense resources, and a group of our donors have stepped up to match donations for the next 3 days to fund this effort. Our brief at the Supreme Court is due in just a few days. Every gift will be doubled, dollar for dollar, through our matching moment. Go to aclj.org and please donate now.